Tired of waiting for his men to return, Slaughter decided to ride into Jackson Hole to see if any of the telegrams had arrived for him. He left Mary in the care of Juanita Sanchez, common law wife of one of the bandidos who lived full time in the hole in the wall. He told her that if anything happened to Mary in his absence, he would personally slit her throat. Slaughter took two of his top guns with him, Whitey Jones and Swede Johansson. Whitey, an albino with silver hair and snow-white skin and pink eyes, was a stone killer who favored a short-barreled 10-gauge Greener shotgun he wore in a cut-down holster on his right hip. Swede Johansson was a 6'6" giant of a man, with blonde hair, blue eyes, and a sweet-looking face that belied the fact that he had killed over 20 men, most of whom he'd beaten to death with his ham-sized fists. He wasn't quick on the draw, but he seldom missed once he cleared leather. The three men tied their horses up outside the cattleman's bar, a misnomer if there ever was one, since the only patrons were outlaws and footpads and other miscreants who rode the Owl Hoot Trail. There wasn't an honest rancher within 20 miles of Jackson Hole. As they stepped into the bar, Slaughter stood next to an old man in buckskins and a beaver skin cap who was leaning on his elbows watching the bartender fill a jug with whiskey. Slaughter wrinkled his nose and glanced at the old mountain man.
Whew! What's that stink? Don't you ever bathe, old-timer?
Sure, sonny. It takes me a bathing every spring and every summer. I figure twice a year's plenty. Any more than that, you tend to get the fever.
You want me to run this stink pot out of here, boss?
Whitey's hand was on the butt of his pistol. Before Slaughter could answer, the mountain man jerked a 12-inch bowie knife from a scabbard on his belt and had the point of the blade under Whitey's chin, forcing his head up.
Now, fellers, I didn't come in here looking for no trouble. But if in trouble is what you're hankering for, then I'll be glad to oblige you.
No, old-timer. We don't want any trouble. Go right ahead and finish getting your supplies.
Thank ye kindly, mister.
He holstered his knife and winked at Whitey.
Sorry about that, Nick, feller, but if in your reach for that six killer again, I'll skin you like a beaver before you can blink.
The man took his jug from the bartender and picked up off the bar a Sharps 50 caliber rifle that was almost as long as he was tall. He nodded at Slaughter and backed out the door, his finger on the trigger of the rifle.
See you gents later!
Why didn't you let me drill that sucker, boss?
You don't appreciate history, Whitey. That man there is one of the last of a dying breed. Another couple years, there won't be any mountain men left.
How about some whiskey, barkeep? My friend here needs something to calm his nerves.
Whitey took a step towards Swede, his eyes glittering with hate. But Slaughter stopped him with a look.
Whitey, why don't you go on over to the telegraph office and see if there's any messages for me? I'll order us some food while you're gone.
Yes, sir.
By the time Whitey returned, Slaughter and Swede were digging into steaks that looked as if they'd been burned to a crisp.
Damn! This is making me appreciate Mrs. Carson's cooking more and more.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't kill her after we get Carson's money. We can keep her around for the winter to keep us warm on cold nights.
Swede, Mrs. Carson is a lady, and I don't want to hear any more talk like that. It's not her fault she's married to the wrong man.
You're not getting soft on us, are you, boss?
Anytime you think that, Swede, just give me a try, and you'll find out how soft I'm getting.
Here's a telegram for you, boss. It's from Max.
Well, I'll be damned.
What's it say, Jim?
Max says a man named Smoke Jensen braced him in Big Rock. Said to tell me if anything happened to Mary Carson, he was gonna cut me to pieces.
Smoke Jensen? The old gunfighter? I thought he was dead.
So did I. Haven't heard anything about him in years. Evidently, he's joined forces with Monty Carson and wants to deal himself into this little fracas.
What's he say about Blackie and Boots?
According to this, they won't be coming back. Jensen says they send their regards from hell.
This is getting complicated, boss. I thought you said Monty would bring us the money once he knew we had his wife.
I must have figured him wrong. Now it looks like we may have a little more trouble getting our hands on our money than I thought.
Is Max on his way back here?
I don't think so. His last line says he wishes us luck, but he didn't figure on having to face Smoke Jensen for his share, and he doesn't think it's worth it.
That yellow-bellied bastard. I told you he was the wrong man to send to Big Rock.
Like I said, Swede, anytime you think you're good enough to take over leadership of this gang, you're welcome to give it a try.
Not that. You're still the boss, Jim, but I don't like the idea of some gun-slick friend of Carson's joining up with him. It complicates matters.
Don't worry. There ain't no way they can get into the hole in the wall without us knowing about it first. And we've still got Mary Carson as our ace in the hole. Monty's got to come through with the money. He doesn't have any other choice in the matter, whether he's got some old geezer ex-gunman to ride with him or not.
Oh, I wouldn't mind mixing it up with this old Jensen fella. It might be fun to see what he's made of, see if all those stories about him are true or not.
He ain't all that old, Whitey.
You know this galoot?
No, but when I was just a kid, my daddy and I were living in this old mining town just west of the Needle Mountains, a place called Rico. It wasn't much more than a camp. It was filled with more gunfighters than miners.
Well, what's that got to do with Smoke Jensen?
I'm getting to it. Anyway, I was in the trading post there one morning, getting supplies for my dad and me, and I saw these two men ride up from the window. One wasn't more than a boy in his teens, and the other was this old mountain man, went by the name Preacher. Seems somebody had told Smoke Jensen the men who killed his father were in town. Anyways, long story short, Smoke Jensen gunned down two men before they could even clear leather. Fastest damn thing I ever saw.
Oh, he was that fast, huh?
Faster than a rattlesnake striking. If you do go up against him, Whitey, you better get him with your first shot, because you sure as hell won't get more than one.
Let's get back to the hole in the wall, boys. If Carson's got some help, we need to make sure we're going to be ready for him when they ride in.
Well, I'm ready for him right now.
I'll remember you said that, Whitey.
When Slaughter got back to his hideout in the hole in the wall, he called all of his men together.
Boys, we may be facing a little more trouble. Seems Monty Carson has gotten some other men to ride with him, and he's on his way out here.
Johnny Tupelo, who called himself the Durango Kid, leaned over and spat on the ground.
That mean he ain't gonna give us money, boss?
Oh, he'll give us some money, all right. Or he'll be getting pieces of his wife in the mail for months to come. I don't rightly know if he plans on putting up a fight or if he's just bringing some extra guns to make sure we keep our end of the bargain. In any case, until we find out just what his intentions are, I want two men at each sentry post around the clock. One to keep anybody who tries to get in here pinned down, and the other to ride out and let us know we got company.
Any idea who he's got riding with him?
Max said it was Smoke Jensen.
Jensen? I thought he was dead.
Well, evidently not, according to Max.
Any others?
Don't have any idea. But if the thought of going up against Jensen worries you, kid, you're welcome to ride out of here anytime.
Not likely, Mr. Slaughter. I reckon my share of $50,000 is worth killing a couple old men past their prime.
Good. Why don't make out a new schedule for standing watch? I figure it'll be a couple of weeks before we see anybody, but it won't hurt to keep a sharp lookout just the same.
Smoke and his men were making good time toward Jackson Hole, Wyoming. The weather had been unusually mild for this time of year, and they'd only had to contend with a few short-lived snowstorms. They made their final camp when Smoke figured they were less than a day's ride from Jackson Hole. As they sat around the campfire now, eating the last of the rations Sally had packed for the trip, Lewis put down his empty plate.
I'll tell you something, Smoke. If Sally ever feels the need to leave you for someone who will really appreciate her, she's welcome to come to my place and cook for me anytime.
I'll bet you won't say that in front of Andre.
Don't even think such a thing, my friend. Andre would gut me like a fish if he even thought I was contemplating letting anyone else cook for me.
Hell, if Miss Sally ever left the sugar loaf, Smoke wouldn't have any hands left to tend the stock. They'd all be off following her to wherever she was going. Most of them would travel 10 miles just for one of her bear sign.
They'd have to leave off or they'd beat you to them, Pearly. Or there wouldn't be any left for them to eat.
All right, men. We need to form a plan of action for when we get to Jackson Hole. Slaughter will have gotten my message by now. And if he's as smart as Monty says he is, then he's going to have men in town watching for us to arrive.
You can bet on that, Smoke. Slaughter hasn't survived this long by not watching his back.
I would suggest that we split up on the outskirts of town. Slaughter will be waiting for Monty and an unknown number of men to arrive together. If we go in by ones and twos, his men won't know we're associated with Monty.
Good idea, Lewis. I propose that Monty camp just outside town, while Cal and Pearlie circle around and go in from the west, Lewis from the north, and I'll enter from the south. With any luck, there won't be anyone there who'll know who I am. That should give us time to locate this muskrat Calhoun Beartooth told us about, and seeing if he's going to be willing to help us find a way back into the hole in the wall.
Wait a minute, Smoke. I ain't going to sit out here cooling my heels while you fellas do all the work.
You don't have any choice, Monty. Slaughter's sure to have given your description to his men. If they see you in town, they'll know Smoke and whoever else has offered to ride with you is there too.
It's the only chance we have of getting close enough to Free Merritt without Slaughter getting wind of our presence, Monty.
Hell, I know you're right, Smoke. It just sticks in my craw having you fellas take risks for Mary and me.
Well, that's what friends are for. We all knew what we was getting into when we offered to help out, Monty. Hell, you'd have done the same for any one of us.
Monty nodded, accepting the wisdom of the plan Smoke laid out.
All right. I'll set up a camp, and when you locate this muskrat Calhoun, you can bring him there.
Pearlie stood up and dusted off the rear of his pants.
Where you going, Pearlie? See if there's any of that apple pie left Miss Sally made.
Smoke, if you ever run short of money, you can just hire Pearlie out to the circus. He could be billed as the man with a bottomless stomach.
Cal and Pearlie slowed their mounts to a walk as they entered the town of Jackson Hole. The light covering of snow on the ground from the last snowfall did little to make the town look any more inviting. The buildings were mostly made of the ponderosa pine logs that were so plentiful on the surrounding mountain slopes, and the streets were dirt and mud, with only a few boardwalks on the main street. Every other building seemed to be a saloon or a gambling parlor, though there were several rather seedy boarding houses and hotels for the mostly transient population.
Jiminy, I can sure see why they call this place Robber's Roost.
Yep, about the only citizens around here that don't make their living with a gun are the barkeeps and falling doves in the whorehouses.
Not much like Big Rock, is it, Pearlie?
Not enough so as you can tell it, Cal. Figure there's any place we can rustle up some breakfast around here.
Cal pursed his lips. After a moment, he pointed to the right side of the street.
There's a sign over that boarding house saying good eats. I reckon that's as good a place as any to look. We gotta find a place to bed down anyway.
They reined in before the building with a sign that read,
Aunt B's Boarding House. Clean sheets and good eats.
When they entered, they saw an entrance to the dining area off to the left. Pearlie removed his hat and made a beeline for the room, holding his nose in the air.
Woo! I smell bacon frying and eggs cooking, Cal. Looks like we struck pay dirt.
Cal just shook his head and followed his partner's nose. Pearlie was like a bloodhound when it came to food, and he could smell out victuals as well as a hound could track a rabbit. They sat at a table near the window where they could watch the comings and goings along the main street and put their hats on a chair. After a moment, a rotund woman wearing a flower-stained apron approached the table.
Howdy, boys. What can I get you?
I'd like 4 hen's eggs scrambled, a pound of bacon, not too crisp, and some flapjacks with syrup. About a gallon of coffee.
Are you Aunt B?
That's what most folks call me, sonny boy. Leastways around here.
Oh, I have a couple of eggs and some bacon and flapjacks, too.
You boys don't exactly look like the usual sort we get around here. You just passing through?
Cal and Pearlie glanced at each other. They hadn't had a chance yet to get their story straight about why they were in Jackson Hole.
Oh, yes, ma'am. We're just up from Texas way. Had a little trouble across the border with the Mexican federates, and we figured it'd be better for our health if we mosey on up north for a spell.
Oh, outlaws, huh?
Oh, no, ma'am. Leastways not here in the States. It's just that the Rangers tend to take a dislike to anybody that causes trouble with the Mexican authorities. So we thought we'd leave Texas until they forgot about our little problems.
Well, I hope you don't plan on staying here too long, boys. Jackson Hole ain't exactly a healthy place to hang around unless you toughen boot leather. Some of the men around here like to eat young fellows like you for breakfast, if you know what I mean.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'll be seeing to your food, and I'll have the boy bring you your coffee right out.
Why'd you tell her we was running for the law?
Well, we gotta fit in, cowboy. You can't just come to a place full of footpads, thieves, and rustlers and pretend to be choir boys. Wouldn't look right.
I guess you're right. Though I hate making her think we ride the Owl Hoot Trail.
Unless I miss my guess, that lady likes to gossip, Cal. And it won't hurt nothing to have her spread the word we're on the run.
While Pearlie was talking, Cal looked out the window and saw Lewis Longmont dismounting in front of the boarding house. Cal nudged Pearlie's shoulders and motioned at the window with his head. Pearlie grinned and nodded, evidently glad to see a friendly face among the hard cases on the street. Lewis sauntered into the dining room, giving Cal and Pearlie a quick glance, but not acknowledging them in any other way. He sat at a table across the room and leaned back in his chair. Aunt Bee brought him a large coffee pot and two mugs.
Your food'll be out shortly.
She walked over to Lewis's table.
Howdy, mister. I'm Aunt Bee. You want breakfast or lunch?
I believe I'll have lunch, Aunt Bee. How about a steak, cooked just long enough to keep it on the plate? Some fried potatoes and some tinned peaches, if you have any.
Coffee?
Yes, please.
Ah, a man with manners. Quite a rarity around here.
A few minutes later, a boy that looked to be no more than 12 or 14 came out of the back room with two large platters in his arms. He placed the plates in front of Cal and Pearlie and walked back to the kitchen. As usual, Pearlie wasted no time. He put his head down and began to eat as if he were starving. Cal glanced over at Lewis and smiled and also began to eat. Just as Lewis was being served, several groups of men entered and the tables in the dining room began to fill up, it being close to the noon hour. Minutes later, Smoke walked in and took a table by himself, sitting, as was his custom, with his back to a wall where he could keep watch on the entrance to the room. Soon, all the tables in the room were filled. Pearlie, finally finished with his food, poured himself another cup of coffee and leaned back in his chair.
Aunt Bee must do all right from the looks of the crowd.
Just then, four men walked up to their table. The first one, a tall, skinny man with several days' growth of whiskers on his face, a tied-down colt on one hip and a large bowie knife in a scabbard on the other, leaned over and put his hands on their table.
If you gents is through eating, why don't you get your asses away from my table and let me and my friends sit down?
Take it easy, partner. We'll leave when we're good and ready, not a minute sooner.
You gonna let a pup like that sass you, Billy?
Billy backed away from the table and squared off, letting his hand dangle near the butt of his pistol.
Hell no, I'm not. Now you youngins can either get up of your own accord, or I'm gonna have to make you.
The three men with Billy spread out next to him, grim expressions on their faces.
Hold on there, Billy Baxter. I don't want no trouble in my place, you hear me, you hooligan?
Before Billy could answer, Pearlie got to his feet.
Don't you worry none, Aunt Bee. This cabron sounded like all talk to me. And even if he does have the guts to go for that smoke wagon on his hip, he won't even clear leather before I put his lights out.
Cal got to his feet and unhooked the leather hammer thong on his colt.
4-2, Pearlie. Looks even enough for me.
Lewis, concerned about the turn of events, cut his eyes over to Smoke, who was sitting there smiling and watching. Smoke winked at Lewis, indicating that he shouldn't worry. Nevertheless, Lewis leaned back and straightened out his right leg, resting his hand next to his pistol, just in case. Baxter's eyes shifted from Pearlie to Cal, seeing no backup in either man. Sweat popped out on his forehead, though the room was cool. He licked suddenly dry lips, unsure of what his next move should be. The man next to him moved over a little, evidently trying to get out of the line of fire. Suddenly, Baxter's hand grabbed for his gun butt. Before he could get his pistol halfway out of his holster, though, Pearlie had drawn and slammed the barrel of his Colt on top of Baxter's head. Only a shade slower. Both Cal's pistols were out with hammers cocked and pointed at the remaining men, who were standing there with mouths wide open and eyes staring.
Jesus God Almighty, that boy's faster than a snake.
You gents better drag your friend out of here before he bleeds all over Aunt Bee's floor.
Aunt Bee rushed over to stare at Baxter.
Damn right. Drag his sorry ass out of here. And don't none of you bother to try and eat here again, you hear me?
Sorry for the trouble, ma'am. Hope I didn't make too much of a mess.
Little blood on the floor is better than hair on the wall, sonny. It's not the first, and it won't be the last blood spilled in this town, neither.
Any chance of us getting a room tonight, ma'am?
Sure, boys. Be a welcome change to have guests who don't shoot off their guns first chance they get. Come on over to the front, and I'll give you a key.
Later that afternoon, after Smoke and Lewis had also gotten rooms at Aunt Bee's boarding house, the four men met in Smoke's room. Lewis looked at Pearlie.
Pearlie, you just about gave me a heart seizure when you braced that cowboy and his friends.
Oh, I wasn't worried, Lewis. After all, Cal and me had you and Smoke to back our play.
Obviously, you didn't need us, Pearlie. You boys handled it just right. By now, everyone in town has heard about your little set-to with Baxter.
You don't think they'll be laying for us when we leave, do you, Smoke?
I doubt it. Things like that must go on every day here in Jackson Hole. By tomorrow, it'll be old news.
Except I'll wager no one attempts to rush you from your table before you're ready again.
Cal, I'd like you and Pearlie to head on over to Schultz's general store this afternoon and let it be known that you're looking for Muskrat Calhoun. Beartooth said that's where he usually gets his supplies for the winter, and I need to know if he's still in town or is already headed up into the High Lonesome.
Yes, sir.
Lewis and I will visit a few of the saloons and gambling houses to see what we can find out about Big Jim Slaughter. We'll see if we can get a handle on just how many men he has up at the hole in the wall with him.
Anything else you want us to do?
Yeah. Start buying up ammunition and gunpowder and dynamite while you're there. Not too much at one time. And try to spread out your purchases among several different places. We don't want anyone to think we're going to war.
Just after supper, Lewis joined a table of men playing poker at a place called the Dog Hole Saloon and Gaming Room. He slipped his coat off and played wearing only his vest with his sleeves rolled up. He found that when he won large sums of money, as he usually did, it eased competitors' minds to see that he had nothing up his sleeves. Of course, he had no need to cheat. Possessed of a remarkable memory and intelligence and a deep knowledge of the odds of drawing certain hands, he rarely lost, especially when playing cowboys who were usually both drunk and stupid. After a couple of hours, one of the men at the table threw down his hand in disgust.
Boys, that about finishes me for tonight. I'm busted.
Perhaps you can get an advance from your boss and rejoin us later.
What boss? I ain't exactly working at the present time.
Oh?
Lewis flipped a $20 gold piece across the table.
Then take this. I make it a practice never to take a man's food money from him.
Well, thanks, mister.
Perhaps you could seek employment with Jim Slaughter. Didn't I hear someone saying a gentleman named Slaughter was hiring men?
The other men at the table seemed to relax slightly, as if the mention of Slaughter's name was risky, even in a town as hard as Jackson Hole.
Just where'd you hear that, mister?
Oh, I don't know. I believe a couple of gentlemen were discussing it at a roulette table earlier in the evening.
It ain't exactly healthy to go around talking about Mr. Slaughter's business hereabouts, Mr. Longmont. Word is, he don't take too kindly to anybody being too nosy about his affairs, if you get my drift.
Oh, of course. And mum's the word regarding this Mr. Slaughter, whoever he might be.
Besides, I heard he's got all the men he needs. He must have 30 men up there at
Shut your mouth, Kyle. You talk too much and you're liable to have somebody cut your tongue out for you.
Oh, go to hell, Davis. Just because you work for Big Jim don't mean you get the right to tell everybody else in town what they can say.
Addy up, gentlemen. I believe it's my deal.
Davis looked politely at the stack of money in front of Lewis.
As for you, Mr. Fancy Tinhorn Gambler, make sure you deal off the top of the deck this time. I'm getting awfully tired of you winning all the pots.
Then perhaps you should make an effort to learn how to play poker, Mr. Davis, if you're tired of losing. Drawing to an inside straight like you did the last hand is a fool's play.
A fool, am I?
You're either a fool or you're stupid, Mr. Davis. And I wouldn't care to wager which it is.
Why, you...
Davis went for his gun, but Lewis was fast. The slug took him in the right shoulder, spinning him around and throwing him face down on the floor.
As I said, I believe it's my deal.
Yes, sir, Mr. Longmont. I believe it is.
Perhaps someone should send for a doctor before poor Mr. Davis bleeds to death.
Smoke was standing at the bar in the Cattleman's Saloon. He was sipping a glass of whiskey and chasing it with beer, drinking slowly so as not to let the liquor cloud his judgment. He'd spoken with several men so far, inquiring whether anyone in the area was hiring men who knew how to use a gun. The answer was always the same. The town was full of such men, and since there were no range wars going on at present, no one was actively hiring. Evidently, word of his inquiry spread, and before long, a tall man, broad through the shoulders with a weathered face and tired eyes, stepped up next to him at the bar. The man wore a Colt low on his hip and a tin star on his vest.
Howdy, stranger. I don't believe I caught your name.
I don't believe I threw it.
A gunfighter with a sense of humor. That's a new one around here. My name's Pike, Walter Pike. But everyone around here just calls me Sheriff.
Howdy, Sheriff Pike. I'm Johnny West.
West, huh? Well, Johnny West, I don't recollect any wanted posters on you at my office, but I'll be sure and check again, first chance I get.
Sheriff, I understood this town was rather open in understanding of men with reputation. Are you telling me that's not the case?
No, you heard right, Mr. West. I don't ordinarily hassle men about what they did or didn't do before they entered my town. I figure it's live and let live, as long as they don't do anything to cause a ruckus here. However, I do like to let newcomers know that if they bust a cap in my town, they're gonna have me to answer to.
Are you that good?
Oh, I'll be the first to admit I'm not the fastest gun in town, but I do maintain an edge.
Pike inclined his head at the door to the saloon. Smoke turned and looked. Two men were standing just inside the bat wings, both cradling short-barreled shotguns in their arms. Their eyes were fixed on Smoke, and their fingers were on the triggers with hammers eared back.
I see what you mean, Sheriff. A sensible precaution in a place known as Robber's Roost, filled with more gunfighters than Dodge City at its prime.
You sure don't talk like your average gunslick, Mr. West. Just what are you doing here in Jackson Hole?
Just a man passing through, Sheriff. Looking to pick up some spare change in the only way I know. By hiring my services out if anybody's interested.
Uh-huh. Well, there's nothing illegal about that so far as it goes, Mr. West. I just thought I'd amble on over and explain the rules of the town to you. You take it easy now, you hear?
Smoke was about to reply when a man ran into the saloon.
Sheriff Pike, a gambler named Lawmont just put some lead in Jack Davis over at the dog hole.
Pike loosened his Colt in its holster and smiled at Smoke.
You see, Mr. West, now I gotta go and make sure this Lawmont was sufficiently provoked to justify shooting someone in my town.
And if he wasn't?
Well, then he'll either leave town of his own accord, or he'll stay forever in Boot Hill.
Pike pulled his hat down tight over his forehead and walked out the bat wings, his deputy close behind. Smoke hesitated. He was tempted to follow and find out what had happened with Lewis, but he didn't want to tip his hand by showing too much interest. Besides, he figured Lewis was perfectly capable of taking care of himself. He turned back to his whiskey and took a sip, wondering what Cal and Pearlie would do. Cal and Pearlie walked into Schultz's General Store and Emporium and were surprised to find a large, well-stocked establishment.
Jiminy Pearlie, this place is bigger than anything we got back in Big Rock.
Yep, it sure is. Guess it's because this is the only place for hundreds of miles for folks to buy supplies and such to get through the winter.
The store was divided into several different parts. On one side was a wall covered with shelves stocked with all manner of foodstuffs. Barrels of flour and beans and coffee, row upon row of tinned milk, meat, and fruits, and even cases stuffed with sides of beef and bacon and all manner of fowls. Another section contained various and sundry mining and trapping equipment, from shovels and picks to traps and axes and skinning knives. The other side of the room was lined with rifles, pistols, cases of ammunitions of all caliber alongside wooden kegs of gunpowder, and cases containing sticks of dynamite and fuses. A large man wearing an apron over a white shirt with his sleeves rolled up approached him with a grin. He was barrel-chested, with a large stomach, dirty blonde hair, and ice blue eyes over a handlebar mustache whose ends hung below ample jowls.
Howdy, gents. What can I get for you? If I don't got it, they don't make it.
We came to stock up on some cartridges and blasting powder. Maybe a few sticks of that dynamite.
Well, you came to the right place. I can fit you out with anything from musket balls to the latest rimfire cartridges from Colt or Smith & Wesson.
The proprietor helped them load up what they needed.
By the way, Mr. Schultz, we heard tell of an old friend of ours sometimes stop by here for heading up into the mountains. His name is Muskrat Calhoun.
Well, as you can tell from the absence of any stink, old Muskrat hasn't been in yet today, but I expect him for too long. He'll likely be here in the next day or two if he wants to get through the mountain passes before they get all snowed in.
Hurley hefted the crate of ammunition onto his shoulder and handed Schultz a stack of bills.
Would you tell him a couple of old friends of his and Beartooth are in town? We're staying over at Aunt Bee's boarding house for the next couple of days.
Gonna partake of a little nightlife before you head on out, huh?
Oh, yes, sir, we sure are.
Well, if old Muskrat happens by and he ain't too drunk to listen, I'll tell him to look you up.
Thank you kindly, Mr. Schultz.
After eating supper at different tables in Aunt Bee's dining room, Smoke and the others met in Smoke's room to compare notes on what they'd learned during the day.
From what I can gather, Slaughter has all the men he needs. At least he's not actively looking to hire any new gun hands.
That squares with what I could glean from my compatriots at the gaming tables. The best estimate I can come up with is he has between 20 and 30 hard cases up in the hole in the wall with him. No one knows for sure, since they never all come into town at the same time, but usually in groups of three or four, and then only when they need supplies or female companionship.
How about you and Cal, Pearly? What did you find out about Muskrat Calhoun?
Well, Muskrat hadn't been in the store to buy his provisions yet, so the proprietor thought it'd be any day now since he's got to do it soon to beat the snows in the passes.
Proprietor's gonna let him know some friends of his in Beartooth or hankering to meet up with him. We told him we was staying at Aunt Bee's boarding house.
Did you get the supplies we talked about?
Oh, yes, sir. We got 4 kegs of gunpowder, a case of dynamite sticks, 20 boxes of ammunition.
Did you remember to get some shells from the Sharps?
Yes, sir. 2 boxes of 20 shells each.
You're planning on doing some long-range shooting, Smoke?
Yeah. Depending on how close Muskrat can get us to the gang's camp, I figured a long gun might come in handy. Spread a little fear and trepidation among the bandits.
Yeah, Smoke can hit a squirrel in the eye at 1,500 yards with that baby.
The knocking was coming from Pearly and Cal's door, which was just down the hall from Smoke's. Smoke stepped to the door, pulled his Colt from his holster, and peeked out into the hall. He could see an older man wearing buckskins waiting outside Pearly's room. Smoke holstered his gun and opened his door, stepping into the hallway.
Mr. Muskrat Calhoun.
The old mountain man whirled, a battered Colt Army revolver appearing in his hand in the wink of an eye.
Yep, that'd be me, sonny boy. Who might you be?
My name's Smoke Jensen. Beartooth said we could look you up and see if you might be able to do us a favor.
You be the Smoke Jensen used to ride with Preacher?
Yes, sir. One and the same.
Well, don't be calling me sir, boy. Onlyest ones ever did that was somebody trying to sell me something.
All right, Muskrat. Would you like to join us down here in my room?
Well, that depends, young'un. If you got a wee mite of whiskey, I could be talked into it.
Well, then come on in, and we'll crack open a bottle of old Kentucky bourbon, if that suits you.
If it's got a bite, it'll suit me just fine.
Muskrat walked into the room and leaned his Sharp's long rifle against the wall, then turned and looked at the others gathered there.
You boys having a prayer meeting or something?
Smoke introduced Muskrat to everyone in the room. Lewis, having heard his request for whiskey, got up, poured a long draft into a water glass, and handed it to the mountain man.
Yeah. How's old Beartooth doing these days?
Well, other than a little rheumatiz, he said he was doing all right.
Rheumatiz goes with the territory if you're gonna live up in a high lonesome during the winter. Of course, Beartooth is getting on up in years, and he ain't as spry as he used to be. Never could keep up with us younger fellers, even in his better days. Nah, I ain't no fool, and I know nobody looks me up just to give me free whiskey. So, just what is it you fellers want from old Muskrat?
Smoke pulled up a chair and leaned forward, his elbows on his knees, and told Muskrat the whole story of the kidnapping and transportation of Mary Carson to the hole in the wall.
We aim to get her back and put some lead in Big Jim Slaughter for what he did.
And you need old Muskrat to show you a back way into the hole in the wall, eh?
That's right. Beartooth said no man alive knows the mountains around Jackson Hole better than you. He said if anyone could get us in there without being seen, it'd be you.
You don't have to shine on me, Smoke Boy. I never believe much in getting involved in other people's business nor feuds, but I surely don't like the idea of taking a man's woman for something he did. It just ain't right to get women folk involved in men's doings. No siree, Bob. It just ain't right.
Then you'll help us?
Damn straight, young man. Damn straight.
Pearly pulled a rolled up piece of paper from a sack on the bed.
I got us a map of the surrounding mountains. It shows all the passes on it.
Ain't never looked at no map in all my born days, young feller. Wouldn't know the first thing about reading one of those. Nope, I'm just gonna have to take you up there personal-like and show you the way. Ain't no way I could explain to you how to get there.
How soon do you think we can be ready to travel?
Well, I reckon near that bottle will last till dawn. Any time after that will be just fine with me.
Lewis took the bottle from the dresser and poured drinks all around, smiling when Cal noticed he'd only been given half as much in his glass as the other men.
Now, whilst we were waiting for this whiskey to run out, Smoke, old Preacher once told me you and he'd had a little set-to up near the Plaza of the Lions back when y'all first rode together. He said it had to do with some galoots that had killed your brother.
Smoke stared into the amber liquid in his glass, thinking back on his early days riding with Preacher. That night passed quickly as he retold the stories of his past and his dealings with the legendary man named Preacher. Mary Carson was showing Juanita Sanchez how to make biscuits in the small cabin where she was being held prisoner.
I pretty good with tortillas and tamales, but I never made biscuits.
It really isn't all that difficult, Juanita. The main thing you have to remember is not to cook them too long or they become hard as rocks. Perhaps that's why some cowboys call them sinkers.
Jim Slaughter and Whitey and Swede walked into the cabin.
Well, I see you women are getting along all right.
Juanita blushed and stepped back away from Mary, as if she were afraid of seeming too friendly to the gringa. Mary placed the metal sheet with the biscuit dough on it into the oven and closed the metal door. She turned and stared at the three men without a trace of fear on her face.
I was just showing Juanita how to make biscuits. I figured you men might like a change of pace from the Mexican food you seem to eat for every meal.
I ain't no do nothing wrong, Senor Slaughter.
I know you didn't, Juanita. Now, why don't you leave us so we can have a little talk with Mrs. Carson?
Si, senor.
After the woman left, Slaughter stepped to the stove, took a steaming coffee pot off the burner, and poured coffee for himself and his men. They sat at the table, and he motioned for Mary to take a seat with him. After she sat down, Slaughter wasted no time in preliminary conversation. He got right to the point of his visit.
I hear from my men that a man named Smoke Jensen has joined your husband, and they're on their way here.
I figured he would.
You knew this was going to happen?
Swede leaned forward, staring at her through narrowed eyes.
Of course. Big Rock is a small community, and we all tend to help one another out when needs be.
Just what do you know about this Smoke Jensen?
He's the only man I know who's faster on the draw and more dangerous than my husband, Mr. Slaughter.
But why would a man go so far as to travel several hundred miles and risk his life just to help a neighbor out in something that's none of his business?
Perhaps it's because you kidnapped me, Mr. Slaughter. You see, in the West, men value their womenfolk above all else. I've heard of men being hanged for just showing disrespect for a lady and to go so far as to steal a man's wife to try and collect a debt. Well, it just isn't done where I come from.
Well, that don't exactly answer my question, Mrs. Carson. This Smoke Jensen has quite a reputation as a gun hawk and a killer. He ain't no gentleman who's likely to go around avenging women who were disrespected, as you put it.
There's a lot you don't know about Smoke Jensen, Mr. Slaughter. It may well be that this situation has a particular significance to Smoke.
What do you mean?
I'm going to tell you men a story about Smoke that my husband once told me. It may explain why Smoke will never let you get away with what you've done.
Go ahead.
When Smoke was just a young man, in his first years living in the mountains, he took a young woman as his wife. They lived up in the High Lonesome for a couple of years. They had a baby, a son that Smoke loved very much. At the time, there was a price on Smoke's head, and a band of bounty hunters tracked him up into the mountains. As luck would have it, when the men arrived at the small log cabin in the woods where Smoke and Nicole lived, Smoke wasn't there. One of their cows had wandered off, and Nicole told them they needed milk for their son to drink, so Smoke went looking for the cow. While he was gone, the bounty hunters burst into the cabin, guns drawn. They were furious when they found Smoke wasn't there, and as men will, they began to do horrible things to his wife and son, trying to find out where Smoke had gone to.
Mary continued on with the story of the death of Nicole and the terrible revenge Smoke Jensen took on the men that perpetrated the crime. She left out none of the grisly details. When she was finished, the men stared at her, shock and fear painted clearly over their faces.
Jesus.
What happened to the rest of the men who rode off?
You don't want to know. Suffice it to say, they all died in horrible ways at Smoke's hand.
So, you think our taking you has made this a personal matter with Jensen, huh?
Yes, I do. And if I know my neighbors, Smoke Jensen won't be the only man to ride with Monty. I'm very afraid you've bitten off more than you can chew, Mr. Slaughter.
Oh, ain't no man gonna ride over 300 miles just because some old bounty hunters once killed his wife and son.
I'm afraid you're wrong, Whitey. I would. And evidently so would this gunfighter named Smoke Jensen.
I think we made a big mistake bringing this woman here, boss.
Maybe so. But I can't be helped now. Remember, we were holed up in the best place on earth to defend against any attempt by Monty and his friends to rescue Mrs. Carson. There simply ain't no way they can get in here without us knowing about it beforehand.
So what are we going to do about it?
Well, nothing for the moment. I'm sure that if we do no harm to Mrs. Carson, Monty will be more than glad to hand over the money he owes us and take his wife on home. She tells him we treated her all right, he won't have no kick coming. After all, it is our money he stole.
When Mary smiled, Slaughter whirled on her.
What are you grinning about?
I'm afraid you've forgotten what kind of man my husband is, Mr. Slaughter. It doesn't matter whose money it is. Now that you've involved me in this matter, he will never rest until he sees you dead and buried. Even if you get the money in a trade from me, you will have to spend the rest of your lives looking back over your shoulders for Monty Carson. And someday, somehow, when you least expect it, he will be there and you will cease to exist.
Monty Carson was delighted to see Smoke and the others when they arrived at his camp with Muskrat Calhoun. He stepped from behind a tree and let the hammer down on his rifle when he saw him approaching the camp.
Man, am I glad to see you.
As the men stood next to the fire warming their hands, he filled coffee mugs from the pot and passed them out. The fall air was just above freezing, and in spite of their heavy coats, the men were chilled to the bone from their long ride on horseback. Muskrat lifted his nose to the air.
Smells like snow.
I don't see no clouds. How you know it's gonna snow?
More than 50 years in a High Lonesome, pup. After a while, you get to know these things, or you don't survive your first blizzard.
Smoke, just what did you find out in Jackson Hole? Anything on Mary?
No, Monty. No one there mentioned seeing Slaughter or any of his men with a woman. But that doesn't mean anything. Slaughter would hardly bring her to town where she might yell for help or attract attention that he didn't want.
We did ascertain that he has between 20 and 30 men in the hole in the wall with him, however.
Them's pretty long odds.
Is it your woman he's taking, young man?
Yes.
And don't go getting discouraged about odds or nothing. We got right on our side. An old muskrat gonna show you how to sneak up on the bastards and hit them before they know what's happening.
When can we get moving?
I'd say this here storm gonna blow for a day or two. Won't do no good to take off now and get caught in it.
Muskrat's right, Monty. It'd be better to use time to plan just what we're gonna do when we get into position around the hole in the wall. After we see how the place is laid out and how many men he's got on sentry duty.
Well, you think we might fix some supper first? I think a lot better when my belly's full.
I wasn't aware your belly ever got full, Pearlie, since I've never known you not to be hungry.
Cal walked to one of the pack horses and pulled a burlap bag off its back. He carried it to the fire and set it down.
Before we left, I had Aunt Bee fix us up a mess of fried chicken and biscuits and some tinned peaches and stuff. It ought to do to put the fire in Pearly's innards out for a while.
After they'd eaten, they scattered their ground blankets near the fire and sat in a group, discussing how best to attack Slaughter's men without causing Mary to be harmed.
Muskrat, you ever been to the hole in the wall?
Yep. Passed through there on a couple occasions a few years back. Place is a deep valley betwixt several peaks. Got its own little stream running through it, so it won't be possible to starve them out. They've probably got enough provisions to last them for weeks.
If we position ourselves on the surrounding mountainsides, what kind of range are we talking about for shooting down into the camp?
Well, depending on just where you are. Anywhere from a couple of hundred yards to a quarter mile or more.
Lewis pulled a rifle from his pack.
I brought a new Remington rolling block rifle with me. It's a single shot, but it's built strong. It takes a .44 caliber rifle slug. I figure it's good for up to 300 yards shooting downhill.
I have a Sharps .52 caliber like yours, Muskrat. If I have to, I'm pretty accurate up to 1,500 yards.
Well, since my eyes have gotten a little dim with the passing years, I can't hit nothing past 1,000 yards with my old .50.
Well, our Winchesters aren't much good over 200 yards, Smoke, so I guess Cal and me better be on the short side of the mountain.
Wait just a damn minute here. If we go firing into those bastards, they're liable to shoot Mary.
Oh, hold on, Monty. We're not going to start anything until we know Mary's safe.
And just how do you plan to do that, young feller?
Why, I plan to go down into the robbers' camp and get her out before we let them know we're there.
You mean you're just going to traipse on down there and tell this Slaughter fella, excuse me, but I'm going to take your hostage on out of here?
Muskrat, you've been in this country for a lot of years. Do you remember how the Indians used to hunt buffalo? Back when they only had bows and arrows?
Sure. They didn't have much range with those old bows, so they'd cover themselves up with an old buffalo skin, smear some buffalo crap on their skin, and creep right into the middle of the herd.
That's how I plan to do it.
Well, how's dressing up like a buffalo gonna fool those men, Smoke?
Snow began to fall, just as Muskrat had said it would. So the men built up the fire and wrapped themselves in thick woolen blankets, trying to get some sleep before tackling the long journey up into the mountain passes toward Hole in the Wall.
How long you figure the snow's gonna last?
Oh, probably till tomorrow afternoon. We should be able to be on our way by just past our noon.
Just as Muskrat said it would, the snowfall began to lighten around noon the next day. The men finished off the last of Aunt Bee's fried chicken and packed the horses for their journey up into the mountains. Cal spurred Silver up next to the mountain man.
How come you don't give your horse a name, Muskrat?
You don't never want to give nothing a name you might have to eat someday, young.
You mean you'd eat your horse?
Hell, pup. I've seen times so bad up here in the winter, I'd eat my partner if I ever had one.
I could never do that.
Smoke tried to joke her up next to the boy.
And don't never say never, Cal.
That's right, boy. After 20 or 30 days of snow up to your neck and nothing to eat except bark off in trees, when your stomach's pressing again your backbone, you'd eat your shoes if you didn't need them to keep your feet from freezing and falling off.
Cal finally smiled. He knew when he was being teased.
I know Pearly eat just about anything that didn't eat him first, but I just don't know as I could do it.
Yeah, I just hope you don't never need to find out just what you do, pup.
Muskrat kicked his pony into a trot up the trail. Smoke rode next to the mountain man, making sure he learned the way up the mountain, just in case he needed to lead the way back down. He glanced around at the brilliant colors of fall foliage on the mountain slopes. The sugar maples were in full bloom, their leaves bright yellow and orange and red, intermixed with aspen and birches whose leaves were a golden yellow and seemed to glow with an almost iridescent flame in the bright sunlight. The peaks in the background were already covered with a layer of snow, looking like pieces of chocolate cake covered with marshmallow icing.
You ever get tired of the colors of fall, Muskrat?
Nope. Can't say as I do, Smoke. Some say it's what keeps mountain men so young inside. The glories we see every day up here in the High Lonesome. I can't for the life of me figure why anybody in their right mind would elect to live in a city or town when they got this beautiful country so close at hand.
Nor can I, Muskrat. Nor can I.
As they followed the twisting, turning trail, which at times became no more than a path between copses of trees and outcroppings of granite buildings, Muskrat would point out the Smoke features to remember along the way. A boulder whose cracks and crevices looked like the face of a bear. A particularly old and weathered oak tree that looked to be over 100 years old. A bubbling mountain stream they passed near a group of rocks that looked like a child's building blocks piled on top of one another. The higher they climbed, the more the vegetation changed. Maple and birch trees became more and more scarce, and the evergreens, such as fir and ponderosa pine, began to become more prevalent.
Are we going to have to climb above the tree line?
Nope. We're going to come awfully close to it. Air's already getting so thin, we're going to have to let the horses rest every little way or they'll found it.
This is as good a time as any. We can fill our canteens, make some coffee while the mounts rest up.
After they dismounted, Pearlie began to pile some rocks in a circle in the clearing to make a fire. Muskrat walked over and shook his head.
Not out here in the open, little beaver. They'll be able to see the smoke.
Muskrat picked up the rocks and piled them at the base of a large fir tree whose limbs stretched 60 feet in the air.
Gather me up some deadfall, the drier the better.
After they'd piled old branches and twigs under the tree, Muskrat used a small gathering of dead leaves and his flint to start a fire. As the smoke curled upward, the branches of the tree dispersed and scattered it so it wasn't visible for more than a couple of hundred feet.
This way won't nobody know we're here.
Muskrat pulled a package of jerked beef from his saddlebags and handed pieces out to the others.
Better get used to this, because it's going to be a while before we have a hot meal again.
Are we getting close?
Muskrat pointed to a ridge about 200 yards up the slope.
Just over that ridge and round a bend in the trail, and we'll be looking right down on the hole in the wall.
What about sentries?
They all on the other side of the hole, on the downslope side. Nobody will figure we're going to come at them from up the mountain.
It took them until just before dusk to make their way along the narrow mountain trails, until they were in a position where they could look down into the hole in the wall without being observed. The place was laid out just as Muskrat had remembered. There were 5 crude cabins arranged along the walls of the canyon, with a small mountain stream running through the center of the area. In addition, there were 10 lean-to type structures where most of the gunmen bedded down at night. The horses were kept in a large corral at the far end of the canyon, with saddles and blankets arrayed along the wooden fence surrounding the corral. There was a large fire that seemed to be kept going day and night in the center of the cleared area between the cabins, where most of the men ate and gathered to drink and smoke and socialize during the evening hours. The main trail into and out of the canyon could be seen winding down the mountainside, with several places where men and groups of 2 were stationed as sentries. Muskrat pointed out vantage points around the canyon where Smoke and the others could place themselves so as to get clean shots down into the compound.
All right, Smoke. I done my part. I got you here. Now it's your show from here on out.
First thing we have to do is find out which cabin Slaughter has Mary in.
Then what?
Then we watch the sentries to find out what kind of schedule they're on. I'm going to need to intercept one after the sentries change, before he gets back to the camp. It takes place.
You mean you're going down there amongst them banditos?
I don't see any other way to get Mary to safety before we attack.
Wait a minute, Smoke. Mary's my responsibility, so it should be me takes a chance on going down there.
You can't do it, Monty. Your wounds aren't healed enough to get the job done. I may have to carry Mary up part of the way on the steeper slopes. Your shoulder will never stand the strain.
What can we do to help?
Keep your eyes peeled on those cabins. Mary will probably be in one that Slaughter goes in and out of. He'll want her close by him in case of trouble.
In less than an hour, Lewis saw 2 women make their way from the largest cabin toward the outhouse behind the building. One of the women was wide and short, the other tall and thin. They were accompanied by a cowboy, evidently along as guard to make sure Mary didn't make a run for it. Lewis scrambled over to where Smoke was squatting, watching the sentries.
She's in the big cabin, Smoke. The one closest to the trail out of the canyon, on the north side.
Smoke raised his head up over the bushes he was behind and fixed the location in his mind. The others came to squat next to him.
All right, men. get to your positions. As soon as I'm out of there and Mary's out of the line of fire, I'll give you a signal. When you hear it, let loose with everything you have to cover us until we get up here.
What if they raise the alarm for your signal?
Then don't wait. Pour as much lead and dynamite into that camp as fast as you can.
How are you going to get her out of that cabin? Slaughter probably has his best men in there with him.
Just keep a close eye on the cabin, and you'll see.
Then, Smoke was up in a crouch and moving fast down the trail toward the nearest group of sentries. When he got close to the two men, he exited the trail and circled around until he was below the men, between their post and the camp in the canyon. He stationed himself behind an outcropping of boulders and hunkered down to wait for the change of sentries. He figured he wouldn't have long to wait. Most times, sentries were changed about the time of the evening meal, so the men coming on duty could eat before taking up their post, and the men relieved of duty could have a hot meal waiting for them on their return. Smoke climbed up on one of the boulders and peered over the cliff edge at the canyon below. He could see food being prepared at the large campfire in the center of the canyon. He was surprised at the number of women he saw working around the fire. But then he realized these weren't the kind of men to deprive themselves of female company for any length of time. He supposed most of the women were prostitutes, as men like these weren't likely to be the marrying kind. Before long, his patience was rewarded as two men made their way up the trail toward the sentries on duty.
Yo, Curly and Mac, don't go shooting us. It's just Joe and Charlie coming to relieve you.
It's a bad time. Mike and me are about to freeze our balls off up here.
The man who spoke, evidently named Curly, was just about Smoke size. He was tall and broad through the shoulders, had a heavy whisker growth that made his jaws look blue in the fading light, and wore a bright red flannel shirt under a thick black woolen coat and a dark hat pulled low over his forehead.
He'll do.
What's for supper tonight?
What do you think? Elk meat and beans and tortillas.
God damn it. Don't those whores know how to cook anything else?
They wasn't brought up here because of their skills with the skillet, Curly.
Yeah. Leastways they know how to keep a body warm at night.
Yeah, but I'll bet that little lady the boss has in his cabin is a sight better at it than those whores.
Yeah, it's a shame the boss don't share her around some.
Smoke felt his mouth go dry and his heart hammer at the way the men were talking about Mary Carson. His hands clenched as his fury mounted. There would be no mercy shown this night for these bastards.
Well, you boys keep your powder dry and try to keep your fingers from freezing off tonight.
Mike and Curly started down the trail, their hands in their coat pockets as they leaned into the frigid wind blowing down the mountain slopes. Smoke pulled his bowie knife from its scabbard on the back of his belt and stood up, moving slowly so his knees wouldn't creak and give his position away. He pulled his left-hand Colt and held it in one hand and the knife in the other. As the two men passed him, he stepped out and brought the Colt down hard on the back of Curly's head. Mike turned around, his eyes wide. Smoke swung the knife in an upward motion. Smoke pulled both bodies off the trail and into the thick brush up the slope a ways. Working fast, he stripped Curly's coat, hat, and shirt off and laid him on the ground.
Sorry about this, Curly. But you shouldn't talk in such a manner about a lady like Mrs. Carson.
As fast as he could, Smoke put on Curly's shirt, coat, and hat. Then Benton took a handful of dirt and smeared it on his cheeks and jaws, hoping that in the darkness, it would look like the man's heavy whisker growth. Satisfied the bodies couldn't be seen from the trail, Smoke Jensen walked down the side of the mountain toward the canyon below.